loose ball. Ewing goes up. The basket counts.
He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius. He scores!
Anthony for three.
Bang! That one goes down, and the game is tied.
Here's Durant moving on Tucker. He turns. He shoots. Yes!
Talking Knicks, Nets, and all things across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
So Pick and Pod, the resident NBA podcast here at WFUV Sports. I'm Chris Carino, being joined by two of my favorites, Kurt Sipple, Owen Kelty. We've done this more than once now. We've assembled this crew for Pick and Pod. It's a very special crew. I think when the crew was assembled earlier in the week, we maybe assumed a different outcome, but you know what happens when you assume. Knicks win last night. They extend the series, going to six games tomorrow night in Indiana. We'll see if Ben Stiller, Timothy Chalamet, Spike Lee, we'll see if they make the trip to Nap City, as they call it. It's nicknamed Nap City due to just the lack of activities down there in Indiana. But nonetheless, the Knicks stay alive. The Knicks not ready to go home. They win that game last night, fully in control, almost whistle to whistle. Before we get into all the intricacies, I'll obviously throw this to Owen Kelty first. Owen, just talk about right now, not necessarily the win and all that, but how happy you are you're not sitting here with a Knicks season over.
I mean, that was just another day of waking up without the Knicks season being over. I know they're still down 3-2. I still have hope. But the fact that I didn't have to wake up this morning after another loss and have to think about what was going to happen in the offseason and how to fix this team really just brings a whole joy for the next about 40 hours, 30-something now, until next game tips off tomorrow night and I'm stressed again. Last night's game was you could say it was stress-free. I mean, they were up mostly the whole game, up like 10 points. But after that game one collapse, I didn't even – with 2 minutes left and they were up, I think it was 16 to 18 at that point, I still didn't trust the lead because I was expecting Aaron Nesmith to go hit 9 straight threes again and just send me into like a spiral. But I'm happy that the season isn't over. Got to be happy with that. Lots to like from last night's game that I think they can take into the next game that we really haven't seen on the defensive end and even rotation-wise and the way they were switching on defense with handling Halliburton. But a lot to like from last night's game. Season's not over yet. Knicks aren't dead yet.
I'm gonna hit it to Kurt here quickly, but just to get kind of a follow-up on that, is there any kind of long-term confidence that you gained last night that maybe didn't exist when you were down 3-1? Any stuff you can take from last night that makes you maybe even more confident that they can maybe actually pull off this comeback? I mean, whether that's Cat's offense or just the defensive mentality last night, there's definitely some things to come back from that game in a positive sense.
Yeah, definitely. I think the way they're being so aggressive on Halliburton, picking up 3/4 of the court most of the game with Mikal, and I think focusing less on Mikal offensively and letting him just burn out all of his energy on defense and say, go full court press Halliburton every single time he's in the game. Like, even if you're not giving us much on the offense, like, burn yourself out on defense. And I think that really made a difference. And then a lot of times they were getting Cat downhill, letting him get the ball at the top of the key and then just go straight at Turner. And then whoever they would have in after that, Bryant and then Bradley, just letting him get downhill. I think they're gonna have to look to do that these next two games, or even just tomorrow, have to let Cat kind of get in that position where he's more ball dominant. And then, I mean, really, it all comes down to, I mean, the start of the game, Brunson started, what was it, 5 of 6, 6 of 7. Yeah. And that really set the tone right away. So I think if you get that to happen again, it's the first quarters that have killed them. They got to come out hot in Indy, can't go down early. That crowd's going to be crazy. So I think sticking with what you did on Halliburton, allowing Mikal to pick him up full court, and then just letting Cat get downhill is kind of the key to success as last night and I think next game going forward.
Yeah, I agree. Going back to that point you made at the very beginning of the first time you talking about how, you know, you get another day of Knicks basketball, I think about it the exact oppositely. Like, I have to go watch the Knicks again. Like, that is like I've watched too much Knicks in the last 3 weeks. I'm assuming, Kurt, you feel a similar way, a similar point of view to me. I know Owen actually very observantly last night talked about how different of Net fans we are, and it's very true. But in this particular circumstance, I think we're in a similar point of view. How did you feel about last night, even going toward Owen's point of Halliburton? I want to make a quick point about Halliburton. I feel even when Halliburton's not good, he does a good job of not being really detrimental to his team. He almost just goes invisible, doesn't take many shots, doesn't turn over the ball very much. He's not a net negative for his team when he's bad. He's just kind of invisible. Kurt, just go into everything, but you know, specifically that as well. Halliburton, obviously, a big story last night.
Well, Chris, I was going to say this is actually the first time in the entire series that we saw Halliburton disappear. I think it was the first time in this entire playoff.
And Kurt, we saw it maybe
it happened once in the last series. He had like a
Happened maybe once or twice this year, but we saw it maybe three games.
It was a lot last
against
year.
The Knicks series last year. I felt like half of that Knicks series last year, Halliburton was basically a non-factor.
You saw him disappear a lot last year, and that was something I thought was really interesting that Monica McNutt talked about yesterday when I was listening to it on the radio. Well, she was talking about how Halliburton being gone for so long forced the Pacers to do so much more on the offensive side of the ball with their bench and the other starters. And this year, this team has Halliburton almost all the entire time. So that whole issue that they had last year with their superstar might not being there the entire game really didn't make a difference, because Halliburton's been scoring upwards of 25 points a game every time that they've played and not been going invisible, which has been so important to how good they've been and to why they've won in such a big fashion. And also what's weird is this is the first time that the Pacers have gone over five games in any of their playoff series right now that they played. They played the Bucks in five. They beat out just like in general. So right now it's not looking as – I'm not as confident as I would like to be on the Pacers' end of the ball because of how the Knicks came out last night. But I still think it's the Pacers' game when they come out in Indiana.
Yeah, and you briefly just mentioned there the teams that both these teams have played before. I think the Eastern Conference may get a reputation of, you know, not being as, you know, tough as the Western Conference, which probably valid from a lot of point of views and a lot of perspectives. But both these teams in the Eastern Conference Finals, I feel like, have earned their licks metaphorically in a lot of ways. These teams have both played kind of gauntlets up to this point. I mean, even the Knicks, it really pains me to give them credit, but I will. Detroit, that's a tough team. That's not an easy first-round matchup. And then they beat the defending champion. Obviously, Tatum gets hurt, but they beat them a couple times while he was healthy. And then, of course, on the other side, this Cleveland team that they beat, along with that Milwaukee team, Indiana also has, you know, fared some of this gauntlet. But kind of just looking at where these two teams are now, obviously, the Thunder are waiting for them. But now, looking at game six, you talked about, oh, and that crowd's going to be kind of rowdy. From my perspective, I said this last night, and I have to be fair, I have to do it both ways. That's going to be an anxious crowd in Indiana, because I think under all circumstances, under all perception, game seven's death. Game seven is death to this Indiana Pacers team. They do not want to go back to New York. Going back to New York, not to say that they're going to lose the series if it goes to seven, but their chances dramatically decrease if it goes to seven. That game, so pivotal. Oh, and I'll go to you because you obviously have the opposite perspective on it. But from the Pacer perspective, just try to shift your mind for a second. How nervous and, you know, because of how pivotal that game could be to them. Like, how nervous should they be?
I agree with you. I think if it goes back to seven, I mean, there's always – it's like you get to game seven, anything can happen. I do think that – with the Garden, I think and Jalen Brunson, the way he's been playing, if it goes back to seven, I would think the Knicks would win. So for the Pacers, I mean, you do have home court. I mean, from a Knicks fan perspective, I'm very nervous about tomorrow night's game. Like, I think – I don't know what the odds are out yet, but I'm assuming the Pacers are favorites. I think that first quarter is going to be so important for Indiana, because you want to get out to that early lead. And if you get up maybe 10 points early, even in the first quarter, that crowd is going to be into it. But – this was kind of the worry with how important it was for the Knicks in game five, was they went out to that early run, went up 10 early, and the crowd was in it the whole game. They kind of from there took all that momentum and ran with it. Indy's going to have to do the same thing in game six. And if they do that, I mean, they're going to win that game. That first quarter for both teams is going to be so important. But I think from a Pacers fan perspective, I mean, you have two games to win one. You're going home. I think you're still feeling pretty confident considering that the games that they've won, I mean, you say that like the Knicks blew game one, but games two and game four, I mean, the Pacers really won those games. Like, I'm looking at those games, like the Knicks made mistakes, but the Pacers won those games. So you're saying that, I mean, the Knicks aren't going to have, like, you feel confident, I think, that you're going to win one of the next two. Even if it goes back to the Garden, I think you'd be somewhat confident. But I think tomorrow, if you lose tomorrow, then you're a little scared. But I would say the Pacers fans would be pretty confident going in tomorrow.
And go on, Kurt.
Was also just going to say quickly that, like, the best crowd that I've heard in this entire series, just as a fan perspective, are the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers
He's
don't.
Bi- he, he's biased. He's biased.
I don't that, think I'm biased.
I'm not going to let that slide. I am not going to let that slide.
The Garden has been game six versus the Celtics TV, and then last night versus
Indiana
the
Pacers
Pacers
on TV have sounded awesome.
Kurt, I hate to do this. I hate to.
You were Landry Shamit chance.
Owen, let me. You don't come off. You come off biased defending this. Okay. I do not come off biased.
You really
I'm
do.
Not coming off biased.
Ready? 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 That crowd, the New York crowd specifically. I know we have. I don't want to open this up to a 20-minute therapy session, but me and Kurt have what we call little brother. What would you call it? What would you
syndrome.
Call it? No, not little brother syndrome. Little brother, I would call it insecurity. So let's just say in 4 years, because it's a hypothetical defending the Knicks. Let me appease myself a little bit. Dylan Harper, point guarding the Nets in 4 years, they build a roster around them. The Nets are a competitor, whether that's a half a decade from now, whenever. That Barclays Center crowd is as loud as even the quietest Garden crowd this playoffs. I don't think Kurt would ever stop talking about it. Kurt would be like, New York is the loudest. These people are the toughest. Do you hear that? Because genuinely, and this is like a real, I'm defending the Knicks. It comes from only an objective point of view because I don't subjectively feel any feelings for the Knicks that are positive, right? But that crowd in general, and we could open this up to a little discussion, but I feel, obviously, I kind of agree with Kurt on a noise level. I feel like whether it's OKC, Indiana, New York, they all have a similar noise, but the New York crowd, it almost has like a little oomph to it that's just kind of different. I don't know how to really explain it. I think it's more the city, and there's almost like an aggression and an anger to the way that specifically the big booms of cheers at the Garden that I just don't get from OKC and Indiana. I don't know if maybe those environments are a little more family friendly or a little more wholesome, and maybe that New York crowd isn't. But I know you know what I'm talking about.
I want to build off of that real quick.
Yes.
I think like what we've talked about this before, it's like, the crowd, they don't just get, and SGA mentioned this actually one of the earlier games in the season that I had covered, that they're not just like a crowd that explodes for like offensive possessions. Like once the shot clock starts going down, like, and there's good defense, even though there's 18 seconds left, when Shamit's playing good defense, like the crowd's starting to stand up. And I think it's
a smart crowd.
That's what makes it different, is it's like the oohs and ahs when it's like just a back and forth play, not just like the big shot that gets the crowd to explode. It's that little plays on defense, like last night with the Shamit thing where had a stop on TJ McConnell up 20 and people are chanting Landry Shamit. So I think that is what makes it a little bit different, is just being locked in more to the smaller things. Whereas in a lot of other crowds, it's kind of just like those big offensive pops where you see like the big crowd reactions.
But that doesn't make sense to me, because Indiana is like basketball USA.
Yeah, it's like what
very
they're
much
at.
Like this. But it doesn't feel like Knick crowds, not to say they're smarter, because like Kurt, that makes me want to throw up, because Knick crowds are not smarter. That's like, that's dumb. But they are more kind of dialed in, I would say, to every dribble, which I don't think maybe is the case. Not even to say they're not dialed in other arenas, but I don't think other arenas know to cheer in the ways that Knicks fans know to cheer, almost from like a societal perspective. Like, you don't want to be embarrassed if you cheer for something that everyone else isn't cheering for. But at the Garden, you know that like there's going to be 3,000 other people that are going to be cheering for what you're cheering for, regardless if it's a charge or travel, like even if it's something really minute. Kurt, go on.
No, I was just saying, the only reason why I said Indiana, one, the shirt's on, everyone's cheering and chanting. I feel like it's just an intimidating place to go. Not to say that the Garden isn't.
No, I agree.
In general, the best crowds that I've seen in a TV fan perspective, not someone that's at the game, has definitely been Indiana and OKC.
OKC is ridiculous.
OKC is ridiculous.
I mean, they literally have nothing but basketball.
Yeah.
And also, they had like thousands of people at the airport after they got back the other night from the game before the clincher in Minnesota. It's genuinely a college atmosphere, like a genuine big Big Ten state college. It feels that way when they're out there. We could shift some of our attention to the Thunder briefly. We'll go back to the Knicks series, obviously. But OKC now waiting for their opponent in this finals. I have a Thunder fan really close in my life, one of my best friends. He said throughout this Eastern Conference finals that it's completely semantical and it does not matter who gets to the finals, because OKC is just going to run through whoever gets up there. I tend to kind of agree. I think OKC is just so much better than both teams in the Eastern Conference. Not to say that those teams aren't good. I talked earlier about the trials and tribulations both teams in the Eastern Conference have faced, but this OKC team, I just feel like, is so talented. And more than anything else, I think they're built to win a championship, maybe two times more than any other team in the NBA right now. You could start Kurt, but I think either now, in the future, 5 years from now, 5 years in the past, the Thunder have set up such a nice infrastructure that they're going to continue to roll this out for the next decade, and it could get scary for the rest of the Western Conference. Kurt, you go on.
Well, my joke is that the Thunder, everyone else is just going to be waiting for the Thunder to win the next six championships because they have so many. One, Sam Presti has like the stockpile of picks that everyone dreams about, as well as they just have such a strong young core that is willing to just stay there. And OKC is such a strong basketball town. Just like the one comparison I heard was it cost $172 to get the most expensive ticket in OKC. Sure. Like, was the least, like, was about how much it cost to have dinner in New York City. Like, that's like insane to me. And that's the reason why I think the fans have been so good, is because you can get in if you're really just like a regular fan that enjoys basketball. And
I thought prices dropped last night. I thought the crowd was a little louder last night at the Garden. I, to your point, I feel like when prices go down, maybe the real fans don't get priced out as much.
I think that's
It was like 500 to get in instead of 1,000.
But I think that's probably one of the issues that the Garden has, is that people can't afford, like, the finals at the Garden, no one's going that's like a fan that can.
The problem is a lot of it's resale. Like, off
that's
of
also true.
First sale, they weren't horrible. I think off of first sale, like, Eastern Conference Finals was like 700, but now, like, resale, obviously.
Owen Kelty's praying that, I mean, aside, Ben Oppenheimer may cover as well. We have a few Knick reporters, but Ben, he's hoping in the next 2 years they get there. Because after the next 2 years, Owen, I don't think you're ever getting to a Knicks finals game unless you're working.
Yeah, there's no chance. I can't even get to a Knicks playoff game. The first round, I tried to go, and I was like, wow, I don't have $600 lying around. But I think we're going back to what you said about, like, the OKC's core. They got very lucky, I think, with Shea not being a Thunder draft pick, because of the way the second apron works, and he can't get that, whatever the highest supermax is. He can still
They're not going to have as contract. Much luck with J-Dub. J-Dub's going to have to
going
to be available.
And Chet will be interesting to see, because the whole second apron thing, I know, like, the idea of what OKC is, how young they are, it's like looking at the next dynasty. It's hard to build a consistent winner now. I mean, seven straight years, we're going to have seven different champions with the second apron rules, and who knows if that changes. I don't know when the next contract's up. I'm sure they're going to end up changing that next CBA, but the Thunder are built to win now. I mean, they have an elite scorer in SGA, and then surrounded by elite defenders at almost every position and off the bench. I mean, going back to like what you said about the Eastern Conference, I do think the Pacers could give them some trouble. The way they just have five shooters on the floor at all times.
You did not just say that.
No, you did not just say that.
You don't think the Pacers could give the Thunder trouble?
The Pacers don't have any size that can compete with
the Knicks. Aren't eliminated yet.
No, but I'm saying if the teams that play each other, I was going to go to the Knicks after. I don't think it's like a sweep for the Thunder.
Oh, if they play the Knicks, it's definitely a sweep.
Because if you look at like what the Nuggets did, the Nuggets found some of the Thunder's flaws. I don't think the Timberwolves were built to beat a team like the Thunder.
Neither are the
way
Knicks.
That they, I mean, Randall kind of disappeared, but I mean, look at it. The Knicks have a similar build to the Nuggets. And then if you look at the Pacers, they have a elite shooting almost. These guys' magnet ball has been insane. Like, I think people crowning the Thunder a little too early. I mean, they're still like I think they're by far the best team, but it's the NBA Finals. You know, anything can happen.
Just to instigate for a second, Pacers Thunder Finals with Hartenstein holding up the Larry O'Brien, that would just be cinema.
I don't hate Hartenstein.
No, but you hate him being the champion and the Knicks aren't being the champion. That definitely gets at you.
I mean, I'm definitely rooting for the Thunder if the Knicks get eliminated.
But either way, Obi Toppin or
Obi, no, I won't be happy for Obi. Hartenstein left because he got paid. Like, we couldn't pay him the money. Like, I'm not going to hate on a guy for going.
It's already not possible, but obviously I want the Knicks to lose as soon as possible. But if they were to go to the finals, my ultimate dream was Randall holding the Larry O'Brien at the Garden. That would have been just like, it would have been like a movie. It would have actually been like,
that would have been it for me.
He wanted He wanted his number in the rafters. Instead, he got rid of it.
Yeah, Kurt, and I'm going to hit it to you here. In a similar vein to what I just said, when it was like the start of the fourth quarter last night, maybe dwindling down the third, I turned to my dad and I was like, "Dad, this is ideally how I would want the Knicks season to end. They collapse on this lead right here and they lose again at home with a upset loss, with a comeback loss with the Pacers." Were you feeling that way, Kurt, around that time in the game? Like, this could be unbelievable.
Well, Chris, are you kidding? That's like a dream. Like, calling Owen at the end. Like, I would have called Owen on the phone.
I wouldn't have. Because you know what? I've been in that position so many times. The kids who specific, not text is whatever. The ones who are calling, they're like need to reach out to you and get in contact with you after you are like miserable. I tend to not like those people. Just
it's the same
just
calls I got after Juan Soto left the Yankees. It was
See, that's not. I don't like it.
I texted Owen after that, but
text is fine because you could ignore a text. If you're calling, you can't ignore a call.
Well, you could definitely ignore a call. But I was going to say, like, that kind of collapse is, like, the dream of how you want the season to end if you're if you're a person that really does not like the Knicks or just, like, the franchise in general. Because it was even funny to me because you're listening on the radio and you hear Monica McNutt talking about how, like, we cannot trust the Knicks with this lead right now. It was 4 minutes left and they were up 18. Or it was, like, 3 minutes.
I'm broken.
It was like, and she was like, they still haven't checked out Tyrese Halliburton. The Knicks could lose here. And then it was like under 14. And they're like, here come the Indiana Pacers. I was like, this is never, it never feels like this is how this happens ever.
I don't know if you got, it's the same feeling now that I get when the Knicks are up like more than 10 with 2 minutes to go is I get every single time the Yankees have like a play at first base, like where the pitcher has to cover. Like I still, I'll be working the Yankee games and I see them going over to first base and I'm just, just in my head, it's just all replaying. That's and then like as that I'm... game was dwindling down last night, I just see Aaron Nesmith from the logo contorting his body midair and just swishing a three.
I mean, this is literally the concept of the first scene of the movie Fever Pitch with Jimmy Fallon and Drew Barrymore. He's watching the Bill Buckner play on repeat, like over and over and over again. Anytime a Red Sox fan, I think, what is it, 40 years now to this day, still sees a ground ball to first base, I think there's a certain part of their stomach that feels a weird way, for sure. And that's hilarious that Nesmith has that kind of control over you right now. That's honestly fantastic. I think just in general, I'm feeling the Knicks, they have, they're in my crawl space. I don't know if Kurt feels the same way. They're in my crawl space. Landry Shamet chance at the Garden last night, that got my crawl space. That pissed me off.
That's pretty awesome. Angry.
That guy rotted on the net bench. He rotted, he was just straight up
not on the Knicks bench.
He was
now
on the Nets.
And I know he's an, I know his whole family are Knicks fans. I know he's like this Knicks fanboy and all this crap. Like that all just annoys me so much because I know how happy he was to play well last night. And that just, that angers me. It's like a souffle of anger. I'm just pissed off. And the Knicks better lose tomorrow. I am not watching two more Knicks games. Oh my God.
And what if they, like, I mean, they could, you know, come back from down 3-1. Is that,
you know, how scared you are to even say they could win this series? Like, that's how done.
Because I don't want to jinx
it. You're like scared to say it.
What? I who knows what can happen now? Anything's
possible. Don't, what's your, Owen, what's your prediction on the series?
Knicks in seven.
Okay, good. Just wanted to get Joe Henry to get the clip for tomorrow night. Anyway. I think we've covered mostly in this series. Anything like specifically, I know we all really watched the game closely last night. Was there any stuff that stuck out to us last night we still kind of want to go over? We obviously have a few more minutes here.
I think it's just that the Knicks led the entire way through. I think that that's the one thing that's something that really was kind of, I don't want to call it impressive because I hate giving the Knicks flowers, just like, but it was more impressive than anything else. And also the stat line of, I think it was the last two people that had the stat line of Karl-Anthony Towns with the 24 points and Jalen Brunson with 32 was Kobe and Shaq, which was such an oddly specific stat, but also just something that was showed that these guys have to perform at such a high level for this team to win, because without them, which I know it's like kind of stupid to say like, oh, your superstars have to perform for you to win. But like, if they're not performing at this high of a level in game six, they're probably going to get ran off the floor because the Pacers are not going to do this for a second time.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot for me stood out was like defensively for them. I mean, they held the Pacers to five made shots in third quarter. They got to the line, I think it was 13 times or something like that. So that's been a consistent problem this series is fouling for the Knicks, putting them in the bonus early in the quarter. But I think what stands out for the whole game was just the defensive mindset from them, just focusing more like, running everything through Brunson and Cat. And then I think Hart, I can pull it up. Hart, Mikal, and Cat shot like a combined from three. It was terrible. Pulling it up right now. Let's see. Cat was 1 of 4 from three. Josh Hart was 0 for 2. Mikal 0 for 2. And OG 1 for 7.
What was Brunson? 7 for 7?
4 of 7 from three. 12 of 18 from the field.
Knicks as a team had a 27% three-point shooting.
Yeah, which that was the point. That was the point I was just about to make. Like Brunson is like Shea. Someone made this point about Shea earlier in the week. Like he made a lot of threes last night, but it kind of was quiet. Like it's not like he dominated the game. And you look at the stat sheet, it's like he had 32. Like what? Like he 32?
He played. He barely even played in the second. In the second half, he played from. He came out around like 3 or 4 minutes left in the third, and didn't check back in until I think 5 or 6 minutes. And he finished with 32 points in 34 minutes on 66% shooting and 4 free throws. I mean, he was incredible yesterday. It was that first half that really was good from him. But, I mean, everyone else, like, Josh Hart was, was all over the place last night, good and bad. But, I mean, Mikal and OG and Anobi, if they're going to win game six, one of these guys has to hit threes.
That's a big point. It's been not even threes, just on the offensive end, especially with like consistency needs to score than either of those two guys. You obviously got some from the other cast of characters last night, got miscellaneous points from DeLon Wright, miscellaneous points from Landry Shamet, but those guys, especially OG, I feel like he was not the guy they needed him to be last night. They were lucky everything else was going, because if they were depending on OG at all last night, I think it would have been a struggle.
The whole series is he's been struggling from three. I mean, they need, if they're going to win game six, it's got to come from Mikal Bridges or OG Anunoby. I think they're going to be the huge piece of them. I mean, hitting some sort of anything from beyond the arc. I mean, Mikal was 50% from the field, but couldn't hit a three. And
he's
OG,
bad. Like, not even in a, not even like in a Knicks way. Like, he's not good. Like, he offensively, I don't know what you're looking for. He had 20 in that game in the Celtics series. Like, that is his ceiling. Like, that is the most he's going to do. Even defensively.
He was great defensively, though, last night.
He wasn't great defensively. He was
on Halliburton?
And he was guarding. Who was he guarding the whole night?
Halliburton.
Okay, but Halliburton, that was not happening. That was like maybe 10 possessions of the game. Halliburton gets so much space with Mikal. He was lucky Halliburton's confidence was not on shooting-wise last night, because Mikal is like almost shaking in his sneakers, afraid that Halliburton's going to blow by him. Like, it is. It's insane. I don't know how you're not seeing, especially in game four. It was like embarrassing. It was bad.
Yeah, I mean,
you go, Kurt.
Thoughts?
Mikal Bridges is just, not even as the Nets fan perspective of Mikal Bridges, every time you see him with the ball, and I don't know if Owen would agree with this, is that I kind of am afraid to see what he's gonna conjure up in the paint when he goes and drives or gets blown by, because he's been awful. And as well as, I don't know why they draw plays for OG to shoot threes, because he's the king of back rim just chucks. He does not hit threes almost ever in this series, as well as just in general. I never love him.
He was cooking in the Celtics series and the Pistons one.
Jump fade in the lane, he does nothing offensively.
He's great on defense, and that's why you keep him on.
He's not.
OG Anunoby?
Not great defensively.
OG Anunoby?
Oh, OG. I was like, about to lose my mind.
No, OG Anunoby not being great defensively.
OG
is great. OG snapped my computer over my knee.
OG is what Mikal's reputation is to Knicks fans defensively. Like, what Knicks fans think Mikal is offensively, that's what OG is.
No, that I agree with. But also, just like in general, OG is the guy that if there could be two of him, it would be better than just the one Mikal Bridges on the court, because he's just so.
Yeah. Bad. I mean, that's like every player.
I know, but
I mean, two OG Anunobis on the court, I don't think anyone's scoring. I think
every team in the NBA would take two OG Anunobis, but I get your point, because Josh Hart is almost that. Like, Josh Hart can almost.
Josh Hart was terrible.
Do I sound subjective if I'm just like he's just. Mikal's just soft on defensively sometimes? Like, he's just soft.
I think he's soft offensively.
I don't really even know what that means.
Like, he doesn't go to the rim.
I also feel like
he does everything he can to avoid contact, which is very frustrating.
Yes, and I think Cat, to his credit last night, was the opposite.
That was the first time. I mean, he always tries to get to the rim, but him, that's what we talk about, him getting downhill and looking to, like, really just go at Turner, who's a guy who doesn't like contact at all. Turner wants to, like, sit off you, guard your stretch five, and then shoot threes on the other end. Like, going at Turner was a key. I think Turner also – didn't he have three – he had three fouls around, like, in the second quarter.
Sat for so long.
Yeah,
he was badly out there. He gets hurt. Like, are we serious?
And Thomas Bryant is not – cannot compete with Mitchell Robinson on the boards.
That's the biggest issue that the Pacers have, I feel, is that they do not have
a backup center.
They cannot compete also with Mitchell Robinson out there. Even Turner, like with the boards offensively.
That's when I said it was cooked last night. When Thomas Bryant subbed in, I was like, who is that? My dad said, that's Thomas Bryant. I was like, oh, no. Oh, no.
He started the first couple of games. Not started, but played in the first couple of games and then got benched for Bradley.
And also, let me just, because we don't have a ton of time here, I think the kind of overarching theme that I think was really the difference last night, the effort spectrum, if you're putting the effort on a spectrum, the Knicks, maybe the best effort they've seen all playoffs so far. They played like a team with their lives on the line, like it was. They very much lived up to the moment from an effort perspective. The Pacers, maybe the worst effort, not only of the playoffs, maybe of the season. They just were 50-50 balls. Obviously missed shots you can't control, but you can control everything else. They're just, effort was lacking last night. Rick Carlisle needs to rip that whole team a new one in tape session today. Get them ready for tomorrow. If that effort disparity is still as large as it was last night, the Pacers are in trouble. I'll start with you, Owen, and I'll kick it to you, Kurt, afterward.
Yeah, that was probably one of their worst performances, I think, just the way they looked defensively. And I mean, it felt like they were getting a lot of good looks on the offensive end. They just weren't falling, which is concerning as a Knicks fan. But yeah, definitely if they come out the same way, I mean, if it goes back to game 7 of the Garden, I really do think the Knicks will win this one. Tomorrow's game is just so important for the Pacers. Charles Barkley said tomorrow's a must win for the Pacers, which I always don't like agree with. I mean, they still can like game 7, but
Owen, for the Knicks, it's a must win tomorrow for the record.
No, I wasn't saying,
and that's not me saying that, like, you were implying it wasn't, but like for Chuck to be like, oh, Pacers, it's a must win tomorrow. Like, no, the Knicks, it's a must win on Saturday.
I mean,
like the Pacers can literally lose and keep playing like that. Like that's to your point where you're like, I don't like that. Like that's, I agree with you. I don't like that.
Like they can lose tomorrow, but their effort, if it's the same, I think it'll be very demoralizing if they come out with that same effort. And if they get blown out again tomorrow, which I don't see happening, but hypothetically, if the Knicks win by 10 double digits, I do think they'll be, you know, going back into the Garden like that. I think there'll be so much momentum on the Knicks side. The beginning of that game, effort-wise, for the Pacers is going to be so important.
And I'm going to kick it to you, Kurt. Just a small point. Haliburton can't disappear. Even if he's inefficient, I just need him shooting the ball, need him engaged in the offense. That needs to happen tomorrow night. Kurt, to you.
That's all I was going to say. And also, when you talk about the effort standpoint, did you see that quote that Greg Doyle was trying to get out of Pascal Siakam when he asked him about
that? Was a whole weird, that was,
and Pascal Siakam was like, we did not play well tonight, we did not have effort. And that was something that, it was good that Pascal pointed that out, but it was just, you cannot go out in the game 5 where the Pacers have been known to close out in big fashions against the Bucks, closing out in overtime. Just like, you cannot do that. You got to come out, you got to punch him. And you got to go back to Indiana, heads held high, going to the finals. Now you're going back to Indiana, hopefully winning at home in a game 6 scenario. But you don't want to go back to the Garden, in my opinion. But if so, Indiana wins in 6.
Owen?
Knicks in 7.
Everyone knew what that one was going to be. Everyone knows what this one's going to be. Obviously, Pacers in 6. In 2000, the Pacers closed it out in game 6 against the Knicks. In 95, the Pacers were up 3-1 against the Knicks. The Knicks came all the way back to lose in game 7 at the Garden. I think I looked it up during the pod, but I would have also just known that. The Winning Time, Reggie Miller documentary, one of the best of all time. And I've kind of grown up with those series over my life. We'll see which of the series this one mirrors. We have game 6 in Indiana tomorrow. We'll see if the Patriots can close it out, and we'll see if Owen Kelty and the Knicks can stay alive and, well, force a game 7 in New York. That would be bananas, Kurt. Kurt, we might have to go into hiding for that one if that ends up being the case.
But I will be unbearable if they win it in 7.
I could not. I would not.
No, I don't even. I genuinely don't want to think about it.
I would not be a basketball fan anymore, I don't think.
I said I wasn't going to be a basketball fan if the Knicks clinched the Celtics the same night as the Nets got the 8th pick in the draft, and then literally that happened. So I have to put my foot in my mouth, and I have to just root for the Pacers for the next couple nights. This has been Pick and Pod. Fantastic episode. We're excited for the rest of playoff basketball. And, guys, the NBA Finals on the horizon. For now, for Pick and Pod, Owen Kelty, Kurt Sipple, me, Chris Carino, we want to wish you a great rest of your day. And Pacers in six. See you later, guys. We'll be right back.